Okay, make sure you're in fellowship as we depart verses 21 through 30 with a few lingering exhortations, lesson learned in regards to the situation at hand where Laban deceives Jacob, substituting Leah in the bridal chamber bed for Rachel. And this being the first time truly, at least recorded, that Jacob has had a taste of his own medicine and what it means to be deceived, as he obviously deceived his father, Isaac, being blind, and now he's caught on a blind side in like fashion for another person's gain in this respect. God didn't protect Jacob. He permitted, under his permissive will, the sins to occur, yet it's all for the benefit of positive volition in regards to Jacob starting to grow up spiritually or growing up spiritually, identifying his SGA and start dealing with it, recognizing the consequences that one might expect in one's life when they let their SGA run unbridled in certain areas, engage in certain sins, especially towards others, that it can come back on your head under the principle of what goes around comes around. And obviously, all this will work out for the good in regards to God's plan for Israel. But in the meantime, we do have often our lumps to bear in our spiritual growth, as we, too, in our own lives, learn those areas of weakness. God helps us point them out through the principle of divine discipline. A just, righteous, loving God disciplines His children for their own good. And just as a normal parent would discipline their child for their good. Children are stupid in regards to life, and the expression of the SGA, and it's up to the parent to deal with that SGA on their behalf as necessary so that they can become wise rather than ignorant. Their foolishness can be recognized for what it is, knowing that if you go out in the world and carry at least certain traits of the SGA with you, while your parents may do in form of divine discipline, is nothing compared to the misery and grief, suffering and hurt that Satan's world can bring upon an individual for infractions as an adult in that regard. So it's all there for the good. Divine discipline obviously is part of this picture. Ultimately, spiritual advance will result because of Jacob's positive volition in this respect. So we note at point 56, as with Leah, Laban gave Rachel Bilhah as her maid. Both of these maids are mentioned to prepare us for the next chapter and the upcoming events there, as they will have a role in the production of the 12 sons of Jacob. 57, here the love story of Jacob and Rachel had a rocky start, and one that did not end, quotely, in quotes, happily ever after. Obviously, it is a love story of sorts. Jacob was head over heels in regards to Rachel. And the beginning of it is not as planned, by Jacob at least. And as we will see, that which he so earnestly desired and wanted and loved physically, with affection, ends up really being the short end of the stick in regards to enjoying longevity and a happily married life after the fact. So 58, this due in part because whatever affection Jacob had for Rachel, divine love was remiss. Again, most of the world, all they see, including Christians, is love in terms of his affection. in regards to another person. Divine love is the highest order of love. Divine love is that love which is predicated upon the character and assets of the individual expressing that love and is not dependent upon the object of love. Love that the world understands, they look at the affectionate type of love, as we will see in our review of the doctrine, looking at the attributes of the individual to whom they're expressing their love as being their motivator and guide in regards to the love expressed. And without divine love, love remains empty. It's not fulfilled. And with it, that affectionate love is dependent upon, obviously, physical circumstances and situations for that love to truly be enjoyed. Divine love is what actually takes the affectionate love and wraps it up in its complete package. And it actually produces the greatest affectionate of love, that one can actually have for another in that respect, in terms of affection, of opening one's soul, one's heart, mind, etc., towards another individual. Here, divine love is remiss. It's not about soul rapport to Jacob. It's about appearance. It's about the voluptuous body and appearance of Rachel, why he picks her to be his wife, or he wants her to be his wife. So whatever affection he has, it is abused. It is not applied in a just way, as he obviously, by agreement, accepts Leah as his wife now, because he's agreeing to Jacob, Laban's further terms for Rachel. And as the marriage will go on, and as we'll see, he simply dismisses Leah, and she's shortchanged in this whole ordeal in regards to any affection from Jacob in and of himself. From himself. Obviously, that's her divine discipline. She's part of this whole mess too. What a quagmire. Jesus really was smart when he says, I have one wife. God was smart when he said, just marry one person. But anyway. So 59, continuing, Jacob also consummates his marriage with Rachel then in verse 30. So Jacob went into Rachel also. The euphemism for sexual intercourse. 60, the remainder of the verse hints at the underlying misery that clouded this new family life. That is 61, the phrase, he loved Rachel more than Leah, tells us that he overtly demonstrated who his favorite was. In verse 30, indeed, he loved Rachel more than Leah. That prepares and underscore the misery, soul misery, that will be perpetuated in this family. Just as Isaac had and Rebecca had their problems, Jacob's going to have his. So, in dealing with his wives, which both are on the level of the prestige of being a wife, not simply a maid, as one of their maids might be a concubine type of wife. Jacob maintains only eyes for Rachel. Now, one may excuse his attitude, I guess, because he didn't want Leah to begin with. But on the other end of the coin, he should be stopped and saying, why is God doing this? Why did God bring Leah into my life? See, too often our STAs just skip over what God's trying to open our eyes about. See, because we continue to run under our STAs. And the Christian life demands that we stop and evaluate, critique things going on in life. Often there are just more questions than answers, it may seem. In those cases, that's when you faith rest. But it doesn't mean that you still don't look and evaluate and say, all right, where might this pertain to, what area of my life, etc. See, most people just skip right on over these things, going with life. Yeah. Run another STA. So, you know, God has a plan for Leah's life also. And over time, things will all work out. But what a rocky road along the way, one that could have been avoided. See, that's the thing. All this could have been avoided if they had just applied doctrine in regards to the situations. So the phrase, he loved Rachel more than Leah, Ahav, Gam, Rachel, men, Leah. 62, now there is no indication that Jacob was mean or cruel to Leah. Only he had no passion for her. He simply dismissed her. His sexual experience with her is probably perfunctory. Just fulfilling his husbandly duty to any degree. But there's no indication that he abused her or anything like that. He just treated her like one of the maids, probably. So 63, his initial interest, as we know, in Rachel was based on her great beauty. Nothing wrong with beauty in and of itself. But when one places appearance over God's plan for one's life, well, now you've got a problem. 64, we are informed that Jacob filled his extra terms and he served with Laban for another 7 years. Avad, Em, Od, Sheva, Shana, Aker. 65, the second 7 years here, bringing this to a total of 14, are to be contrasted to the first in verse 20. This time not quite so rosy due to misery in the household. You got to at least appreciate the picture that this whole scenario is drawn along in regards to Jacob, how life is going along. In his eyes, so nice, so smooth, it's like the bottom just drops out. That's the way life is sometimes. And sometimes that's what believers need in order to wake up spiritually and advance themselves. To start looking to God a little bit more seriously in their lives rather than what their flesh wants. So, 66, Jacob's divine discipline for his equally reprehensible sins will work to his good as he was a positive believer. Again, that is the divine design of divine discipline in part, and that is to benefit positive volition. A primary passage that deals with divine discipline, a principle that, again, a lot of believers in the fundamentalist world at least act like they're not aware of this principle. You know, to them, as long as good things are happening in their life, God is great, God's with me, etc. When something bad happens, then that's when they start throwing out those bad luck terms or Satan. Satan made me do it, you know, blah, blah, blah. The Hebrews had the same problem. They started taking things of God intervening in their life in form of pressure and divine discipline, etc., as simply undeserved rather than deserved suffering. See, suffering, as we know, through the doctrine of suffering, comes in one of two forms: deserved suffering, that which obviously is based on our own malfeasance in regards to doctrine, or undeserved suffering that we just essentially face with the cosmos simply because we're living in the cosmos, not anything that we've done necessarily. See? Divine discipline is deserved suffering because we will not line up a doctrine and isolate our sin nature in a certain area of our life, causing us spiritual neutrality at best. Hebrews 12:5. And people think, well, I battled my STA. I love that verse 4, the writer of Hebrews. Oh, yeah? Verse 4, you have not resisted to the point of shedding blood and you're striving against sin. How hard have you tried? I'm telling you, too often, all of us just let our STA get a hold of it. We just roll over with it and go with it. See? How hard are you trying to battle your STA? You know? A little effort. It doesn't come automatically. There's not something mystical that you get in fellowship and all of a sudden God's just going to keep you from sinning. That's ridiculous. See? In verse 5, and have you completely forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons? We're all God's children. We're part of God's family. And he's seen here as the parental authority, as the father. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord. Well, first and foremost, you've got to recognize it as discipline rather than shrug it off in regards to, you know, somebody else's problem or the problem of the world or whatever other rationalization the STA likes to come up with. So you've got to identify that as discipline. And when you do, then you need to seriously consider it. See, not to regard lightly. Not just to slough it off, okay, yeah, I deserve that, and move on. See, you need to take it and evaluate your life in regards to it. And recognize that God's trying to get your attention. Nor faint when you are reproved by Him. Fainting looks at the fact that when God intervenes with divine discipline, sometimes He'll put the screws to you and pressure will be great. And you think that you can't endure because of it. Soul fainting. That's a sign of soul weakness. See? Reproving, recognizing that discipline is designed to hurt. It's not designed to be fun. But it's all for a righteous purpose. It's all for the benefit of those who are ultimately positive, to draw out from them their positive volition and expression and application. Verse 6, for those whom the Lord loves, He disciplines. And He scourges every son whom He receives. That's every son. None of us are going to get by without divine discipline in our lives. It's a matter of life. It's a fact of life. And Proverbs 3:12 obviously is where the quotation for those whom the Lord loves, He disciplines and scourges every son whom He receives is derived from there. See? Our STA acts like children and is foolish. And hence needs the Father's hand on occasion to check us. Obviously, He graces it out a lot too. So we recognize all that. So all this is obviously for primary Jacob's benefit. But it will be for his benefit because of his positive volition. All right. We're going to review the doctrine of love.